Welcome to SpEducation, the special education podcast by SpEducators and for SpEducators, where we discuss all things related to special education, or as I like to say, SpEducation, from the point of view of professionals working in the field. I'm Sarah Perkins, a nationally certified school psychologist currently practicing in a junior high in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I'm Leanne McElwain. I'm a special ed teacher at an elementary school and have a background in secondary schools as well.
In this episode, we're going to address a Supreme Court case called Honig versus Doe that occurred in 1988. And this court case was about FAPE, Free Appropriate Public Education, and about access to education even when a student has behaviors. Mm-hmm. So it came from California, from San Francisco, and there were two students. So it's called Honig versus Doe, but there was Doe and Smith. But they had similar cases and so were lumped together. They were both labeled with emotional disability. And so John Doe was being taunted by peers. And so he choked the peer and then kicked out a window. And so he was then suspended and recommended for expulsion. And then Jack Smith stole, it doesn't say what he stole, extorted money and made sexually inappropriate comments. And he was suspended, recommended for expulsion, and then he was homeschooled as a result of the disciplinary action. So mm-hmm. The Supreme Court case was about being able to access school despite the behavior. Mm-hmm. So the majority opinion was written by Justice Brennan. It's sort of like a my first thought, I was going to say cute, but maybe I shouldn't say that about a Supreme Court opinion. It's a cute history about like IDEA and the Education of the Handicapped Act. And so he sort of outlines the inequities prior to the act. And I mean, honestly, I'm like, they should just like put that in a book, except, you know, how lawyers write. So he does point out that 80% of students with emotional disabilities were not adequately educated prior to the act. And he cites some other cases, like he cites Rowley, mm-hmm. which, as a refresher, is the like basic special education court case where they said you get the serviceable Chevy, not the Cadillac. Mm-hmm. And he also cites Mills and Park, which I'm trying to remember right now. Can't remember off the top of my head what those are. And then he also discusses parental participation in IEPs, mm-hmm. which is a topic that's been big in our district lately, ensuring mm-hmm. parental participation. So I was like, okay, I can see where he's coming from. And he was talking about that if the parents were adequately involved, then maybe some of this would be headed off, I believe. Has parental participation been big for you too lately?
It has been big in terms of documenting their participation in things, notifying them if there's any changes in anything. And then essentially what it has, I would say it hasn't changed our practice, at least my practice, but has increased the documentation of that practice, just demonstrating parental involvement.
Fair enough. I looked it up. Park was about not denying access to education because of a cognitive disabilities. Mm. So he was sort of saying, same goes for emotional disabilities. Mm-hmm. So when he talks through, one of the reasons I liked this case is because it relates a lot. Doesn't really talk about manifests a lot, but I feel like it relates to manifests and behavior plans, mm-hmm. which is a lot of, I mean, it's totally selfish, but it's like where I live.
Yeah.
And I feel like hasn't been a lot of clarity provided from the district or the state. Mm-hmm. So he talks about, for example, related to that in John Doe's case, that's the one who choked the student, that his goals identified reducing aggression as a need. And then also noted that he struggled with hygiene and social skills and that these difficulties led to the taunts that resulted in him choking the student. Mm. So I thought that was interesting to know, and to me it sort of fed into manifest. Like, if you're working on that, does that mean that you're identifying that as part of the disability? Mm. Mm-hmm. And then when he talked about the other kid, the one who was stealing and being sexually inappropriate, he said that there was a history of abuse noted in the evaluations, which doesn't, he didn't really then say like how that plays out in the disability, which I wish he had. But the other really interesting thing he said is that the school had wanted to put him in a self-contained program, but the parents wanted him mainstreamed, which I know this is an issue that you and I have encountered repeatedly in both directions, mm-hmm. where the school thinks the child could be in a less restrictive setting and the parent pushes mm-hmm. and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I think historically in our district, we tend to be told just do what parents want. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's gotten less the case recently, mm-hmm. but I feel like we're actually also almost getting more pushback, maybe not as a direct result of that, but more parent pushback, more advocate pushback lately.
Right. I agree. It does seem, it's hard to know if it's the chicken or the egg. Like, is it that we're more focused on parental involvement and therefore giving more of a voice because we are documenting it, taking it more seriously? It's not just summarizing what the parent said. It's much more specific about what's behind what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And then that is bleeding into what the next steps are and how seriously we're taking it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's say that they went along with the mainstreaming, but when that was unsuccessful, it sounds like they reached a compromise and moved to half days mm-hmm. in the program. And then the next year, he started in the program. So the district eventually sort of got what they wanted. But then they met with the family and moved back to half days. But then they told the family, if the behavior continues. So they reduced the services, but then said, if the behavior continues, we'll expel him. And the behavior continued, and they expelled him.
Oh.
Which, I don't know. I feel like maybe that wasn't the right move.
Right.
So the district court below this had found that school districts cannot suspend students with disabilities for more than 5 days. And they set up a compliance monitoring system and ordered the state to provide services if the school district was unwilling to do so, mm-hmm. unable or unwilling to do so. Mm-hmm. So John Doe had aged out by the time this court case hit the Supreme Court. So okay. They were sort of like, well, he's aged out. But Jack Smith, the second one, mm-hmm. was 20 and he had not yet graduated. Mm. So his education was still in play. And they said, it seems likely he's going to continue to struggle with his behavior. The school district had agreed that it was beyond his control. And they said he's probably going to be disciplined again for very similar behavior. Mm-hmm. So then they started talking about the stay put provision, which says that states and school districts can't unilaterally exclude disabled students for their conduct, for behavior, until the proper steps are taken. Mm-hmm. And it says here that that section is unequivocal in its mandate that the child shall remain in the then current educational placement. And this demonstrates a congressional attempt to strip schools of the unilateral authority they had traditionally employed to exclude disabled students, particularly emotionally disturbed students, from school. Hmm. Which actually reminds me that in our district, recently had communication this school year about unilateral decisions mm. and not doing that. Mm-hmm. And it didn't say that in the memo we got, but sounds like it's basically pulled explicitly from this right. wording, mm-hmm. which makes me wonder if students were being excluded, mm-hmm. given that, I mean, the unilateral decisions don't have to apply just to exclusion, but I do mm-hmm. wonder if there was some of that going on mm-hmm. in our district.
Or if that was brought up as a reason, even if it were the district were close to doing that.
Yeah.
Like, if it appears that it was unilateral, even though perhaps it wasn't, maybe documentation didn't occur, and so, you know, anything that would have shown it wasn't unilateral wasn't actually able to be verified.
Yeah. One thing that I've had come up, it's not really the purview of this court case, I wish it were, in terms of that, is I think it's relatively clear that you can't go beyond 10 days of suspension without some sort of manifestation. But I've had a couple school leaders tell me, district leaders rather, tell me that you can, for each manifest, take up to 10 days to prepare for the manifest, and the child does not need to be at school during that time, even though you're manifesting because they hit the 10 days.
Mm. I wouldn't think that'd be right.
I had concerns about that too, because I had a student who I manifested on 5 or 6 times in the past couple of years. And so when I was doing the math, I'm like, so the first 10 days and then 10 days, up to 10 days for each manifest. Mm-hmm. And they did say, well, it's probably not reasonable to say you need the full 10 days for subsequent manifests. And I was like, okay, but still, theoretically, mm-hmm. maybe there are reasons why I did, mm-hmm. right? Then he could be excluded from school 60 days that school year? Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem mm-hmm. like what the courts were going for. Or the Congress.
No, I wonder where they're getting there. I mean, okay, that's nice to say to your staff, I suppose, in a district. But typically, as a teacher, I don't feel like I'm afforded the space and time to get the work done. I feel like it's like, well, it's required, so get it done. Mm-hmm. Rather than, well, you get 10 days too.
Right?
I know. It doesn't seem reasonable.
No. I feel like 10 hours feels luxurious, but okay.
I know.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting, and I did think it was interesting that Justice Brennan noted here that the congressional intent to strip schools of the unilateral authority. And so I feel like if you just lean on that, that probably answers the question. If we're saying simply because the psych's not ready or whoever's running the manifest, that he can't come to school, that feels pretty unilateral.
Right.
And he's saying pretty clearly that that was not the congressional intent. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'll bring that up, but I do think that for my own self, that answers that question.
Absolutely. I think that is good reasoning.
Yeah. Now, it said the court, this was also interesting because I've had this come up, especially with administrators, because administrators are always, which is their job, they're always worried about like broader school safety. Mm-hmm. And I always tell them, well, it's not my job to worry about all the kids. It's my job to worry about this kid in this situation.
Yeah.
You worry about all the kids, mm-hmm. which is an important job. But they said the court declined to add an exception for dangerousness. And it found that Congress considered 2 court cases when writing that law and therefore did not intend an exception. Mm. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were like, no, if they'd wanted an exception, they would have put it in the law. Mm. Which I can totally get principals going, but he can't hurt the other children. Mm-hmm. But I can totally get from the SPED side going, but he has a right to an education.
Yeah. And then my mind goes to, how are we going to keep everyone safe? I mean, okay.
Yeah,
we
fine.
We can all be in here together.
Yeah. So what measures are you allowed to take at that point? Mm-hmm. I mean, presumably you could maybe separate him from the kitty choked, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that would be reasonable. Mm-hmm.
Still in the classroom, but with other kids or, have additional adult support and then training in those areas. But like,
I know. I wonder if it's to stay put, then like you can't necessarily put him in a more restrictive.
No.
But could you maybe just mess with his schedule? Mm-hmm. So he's in the same restrictive level for math, but not that math class. I mean,
yeah.
Which is fine for older kids.
Have to happen.
Or bigger schools, but at an elementary where there's 1 second grade mm-hmm. class, now you're SOL. Yeah. Oh, look, I'm so smart. I did write down those court cases.
Oh, good.
Okay, so Mills versus the board. That was a class action suit on behalf of 5 children that found that accommodations cannot be denied based on cost to the school district and that due process was required prior to expulsion. And then the Park versus PA, that, as I mentioned, is that you can't deny access to education. Basically, you can't say kids are too hard for cognitive reasons. Which, that's one of my favorite things about SPED, right? Is that we as a society have agreed that no kids, you can't give up on children. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Doesn't matter how hard they are, which I love.
I think it's fine. I do love that. I do love that and believe that in my heart. But I don't appreciate that it falls to one person oftentimes in a building, and that being like a sped teacher, sometimes social worker, you know.
Yes.
I mean, wholeheartedly, I believe it. And I believe everyone's in the school, in education, to help students and, you know, to not exclude students. But it cannot be effectively implemented by one person.
I think that's really powerful. And it reminds me of a student we had years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember you sitting in a room with him one-on-one because he was unsafe. And you having scratches all up and down your arms. And the central administration staff coming and saying, he's fine where he is. Mm-hmm. And we were saying, he's not. Like, she's bleeding daily. And they were like, not sure we care. Mm-hmm. And like, that's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, it has to be on the...
I mean, and eventually we were able to get him to a better place. And he did better. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't have taken years. Right. And it shouldn't be... that it's reasonable to ask our SPED staff to bleed so that students have access.
Right.
There has to be some sort of support and mitigating factors to allow everybody to have a decent chance of having an okay and safe experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Congress did allow the use of non-placement changing procedures. So like we were talking about, such procedures can include the use of study carrels, timeouts, detention, or restriction of privilege. Interesting, because we would call like detention or in-school suspension a change of placement.
Mm-hmm. But
he said, more drastically, where a student poses an immediate threat to the safety of others, officials may temporarily suspend him for up to 10 school days. And it allows for interim placements if the family agrees. Which I feel like we've done. I feel like we've talked to families. I don't know about you and I, but me and at my recent school, I feel like we've had conversations where, look, he's welcome to come to school, but we're going to have him, if it's okay with you, we're going to have him go into the ISS room or into this other more restrictive room during science, because science is where it all went down and they're dissecting pigs and we don't need the guy with the scalpel right now.
Right.
And the parents were like, that's cool. And we're like, great, we'll just do that till our meeting.
Yeah.
And that worked okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I like that they sort of have that you can chat about it thing. Then they say maintaining the current placement is the default unless the school district can prove it's substantially likely to result in injury to others or students. And in my experience, defining serious injury and like proving those things is a really high bar in the law. Like, I know historically, like when you look at manifests, they have the rules that you can do the 45-day placement for drugs, weapons, or serious bodily injury. Mm-hmm. And drugs and weapons are pretty clearly defined. But then serious bodily injury is like threat of death or loss of limb. So like a broken nose is not serious. Broken arm. It's not serious bodily injury, according to that definition.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy.
Right? I mean, in fact, he could break your nose, your arm, and your leg. And that's not, doesn't meet the legal definition of serious bodily injury. Which is crazy to me.
It is.
So, I mean, the good news is that, like, I've never seen someone seriously injured, according to that definition at school.
Yeah.
Probably, likely never will. Gosh, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But it means it's like functionally a non-useful term.
Yeah. I do wonder what other children's parents would say about that.
Yeah.
It would be, I mean, I suppose they would have to prove, just like any disability case where you have to show like a percentage of harm that was done or something.
Well, and I think they certainly could, of course, do like a civil lawsuit around that. But in terms of... Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. And I think that's something that, like, again, principals worry a lot about. Well, how's it going to look to Joey when the kid who beat him up yesterday is back in class?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, that's fair. You know, and that's what I always tell the principals. I'm like, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But my problem is the kid who beat up Joey and protecting his rights. You should definitely do whatever you need to do to protect Joey as long as my friend still gets to be at school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel bad when I have those conversations with principals because I'm like, I'm not trying to downplay the problem. I'm just telling you that my side is protecting the perpetrator.
Yeah.
Which I get doesn't feel good, but But that's why I'm here.
Right. It's interesting because I know we've had background together in other schools where the admin team has not supported you in some of those beliefs. And I mean, just in terms of standards and roles. And it's gotten very challenging for you as a professional because decisions they make outside of your kind of purview ended up putting you in a situation you weren't comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like speaking in turn, I guess it's almost like negating or working around you and then having things in place that weren't legally responsible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I do wonder, because there's so many changes happening in our system right now, which may be great, I'm not sure, but I wonder if, and also the just the changing, so many new staff coming and going, if there's somebody around in each building who, one, has the knowledge to know what is reasonable, and two, feels like they have the standing, whether it's like political standing, you know, social capital, or positional standing in terms of their job title, or however they define standing, to say to the principal, don't do the thing.
Yeah.
Because I think that having that person in a building is so important.
Yes.
And, but it's not a given. Like even early in my career, I remember a completely different situation where a principal wanted to label a kid with learning disability because her IQ was so high that there was a 22-point difference, even though her academics were average. And I said, that's illegal. And she said, it's not, and we're doing it. And I asked for support from central administration, and they declined to get involved. And that kid ended up being sped, as far as I know, for her entire life. And I always regretted that. But it was my first year, and I argued.
Yeah.
So I did. I did argue.
Right.
I would have argued more if it happened today.
Yeah. Right.
But it's like, even when I did argue, I didn't win. Not that it was about winning, but...
Right. Your perspective or your understanding of the law wasn't taken into consideration.
And so, yeah, I do wonder about that. And I mean, I know that even in our district, there's buildings where there aren't people who are well situated through no fault of their own to have those conversations. And I'm certain throughout the country and our state, especially because it's such a small state, you know, if you have that one knowledgeable speducator retire, and now you have a brand new speducator who's new to the town, and we know in Wyoming that makes such a big difference, then they're not going to have any standing to have those hard conversations.
Right.
The two other opinions on this court case were like super lame. There was one, a concurring opinion from Justice Rehnquist, and he was just like, yeah, John Doe's case is moot because he's old, which, okay, who cares?
Yeah.
And then Justice... Scalia wrote a dissenting opinion, and he was like, it shouldn't be moot because he wasn't always old or something, which, again, who cares? So is, I mean, I'm sure that's very important from like a lawyerly point of view, but from a SPED point of view, they weren't arguing about any of the SPED findings.
Yeah.
So it seemed like everybody pretty much agreed with the findings. So I don't know. I think this is an interesting case to just remind ourselves that students have an access to the education, full stop, is basically the big takeaway for me. And that, like, you can problem solve, but if you're saying they don't get access, you're probably wrong, is sort of how I read it.
Yeah, I agree. So. And extremely, extremely wrong if you've made that decision unilaterally.
Yes, yes. Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I, twice in my notes, I have unilateral in italics because that was... the big deal is that you cannot, it says here, Justice Brennan was most concerned about the unilateral decision by the LEA, by the school district. So, yep, I think you're right. If in doubt, involve the parents and keep the kid in school.
Those are our marching orders.
Yep. Which.
They're pretty decent.
Yeah, pretty decent. And nothing shocking.
Unless we aren't supported and it's up to us.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that I guess you're right. That would probably be like my takeaway. And like, if this situation arises, get thee a team.
Yeah. Yeah. Rely on that team. Yes.
Yeah. Like, you, like, if you're feeling like you alone are supporting the kid's right to an education or saying we have to call the mom, then, like, immediately phone a friend and get another friend in the room with you who's standing next to you saying, yes, he needs to stay, and where's mom?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Education.